Our presentation today is Transforming Our Community. Let's start with me. And it's not by Frank Davis. He sent me an email this morning that he was badly down with the flu. And so I quickly called somebody else who said he could do it. I was so grateful. So, James Morgan works for Just Dane, helping former people returning from prison to adjust to life on the outside. James is has been a member of Moses since its very beginning. Moses is an organization affiliated with Wisdom, a statewide activist network that is working mainly for working for transformative justice in the criminal legal system in Wisconsin. Prairie is a member of Moses. I'm really not a member of Moses. I am Prairie's representative to Moses. Moses is made up of many, maybe around 20, faith-based organizations, congregations. First Unitarian is one of Moses' members. James Reeb is another. Prairie is another. Snowflower Buddhist Sangha is another. St. Paul AME is another. There's many, many churches that belong to Moses. Oh, okay. I think that's all I need to say. I am going to invite James up here to take over.
And you can take your mask off.
Okay. All right. Consider myself one of you, huh? Well, I am. I'm a Unitarian. I am a member of First Unitarian. Been there for close to 9 years. And like many of you, I found it to be a place of welcoming, a place of family, a place of wisdom, a place of compassion and understanding. Been many other things before then. Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, all of them. Studied them well. Each has its form. I'll put it that way. But I am Unitarian, and thank you, Pam. I'm actually going to thank Frank for not being here this morning. And I tend to go rather long, let me warn you, so I'm going to try to stay within this time frame. But I am going to stay on the topic that he initially posted here, transforming our community. Let's start with me. And I think it's appropriate for me to give you a little bit of background. I'm not originally from Wisconsin. I'm originally from Saginaw, Michigan. In the early 80s, I relocated to Madison, to Dane County, looking for a better life. Made some poor choices, very poor choices and very, very poor decisions, and ended up in the Wisconsin prison system for 24 and a half years of my life, close to 30. Learned a lot about the incarceration system. Learned a lot about human beings. Learned a lot about our world in general, using one simple tactic, learning how to pay attention. Because there was so much that was happening in the world as it existed when I went into the system, and it had changed drastically when I was released to the community. And so I was looking for a place to begin to set a foundation for transformation. I was not the thing that I went into the system with. I had become someone coming out. There was no notice of that, okay, by much of the community, because the community only knew what I had left the community with. They didn't have the opportunity to experience the transformation. The transformation that I believe we all have in common, okay, as we, you know, are birthed into this world and we become, you know, young children, we become young adults, we become parents, we become grandparents, we become employees, we become so many things. And at each one of those stages, a transformation occurs. A reality sets in. And that's one of the things that I carry with me on a daily basis. I understand the shoulds in life, the supposed to be's in life, but I primarily focus upon the realities of life. The day-to-day existence as I experience it, and as others, my fellow brothers and sisters who walk this earth, experience it. Now, I have to be honest with you. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see a single white person in this room. That's not language that I utilize. I see human beings. I think when we began to see one another that way, the terminology and the languages that have been created to set us apart have the potential to disappear. And we become more adept at, number one, getting our needs met, and then the second is being able to be in a space of advocacy for those who don't have a voice. That's very important to me. I don't just talk about it, I strive to live that principle every day. Now, they said something, James, we want you to talk about Moses. I don't want to talk about Moses. I'm not going to say everything you need to know about Moses is in this yearbook. By the way, I'm an artist. This is some of my artwork on the cover. Because a lot of what they asked me to talk about is already here. Okay? So, you know, take some time, go in here, and you can find out the various, I don't like using the word program, projects and initiatives that Moses is working on in consolidation with Wisdom and with its many congregations of people who understand the term sacrifice. Because this calls for sacrifice. It calls for sacrifice of people's time. It takes sacrifice of people's money. It takes sacrifice of people's understanding the concept of practicing empathy. You know, they said, you know, Pat said, you know, I work for Just Dane, and at Just Dane, I'm a peer support specialist. That's the title. What I practice is empathy for other human beings, engaging them, not carrying them or helping them or saving them, but doing the best that I can with the tools that I have at my disposal to empower them. To empower them, okay? And I always have that initial conversation with individuals to say that I can only assist you to the degree that you allow me, because I want to respect their right to choose for themselves what is best for them, okay? And I practice that same principle and that concept when I'm working with organizations. But I understand something, because we here at Moses and other agencies and organizations, we want to say we're here to change systems. What allows, let me ask you a question. What do you believe allows systems to operate? People. Ah, people. So when we say, well, it's just a system, that's too easy. We give them a pass. There's no ability to hold anyone accountable when we say it's just a system. It's just a system. It's always been that way. You know, it's forever going to be that way. Let me share a quick little story with you all. There was a little lion cub. And this little lion cub was an avid reader. And every story that he read about the conflict between man and the lion, man always won. He was curious. Why is this? So he went and asked his father. He said, "Dad, I keep reading these stories. And every time there's a conflict between man and the lion, man always wins." Father said, "Wow, I don't have to answer to your question, son. It's always been that way. Go talk to your grandfather." The little lion cub threw his little backpack on his back, trekked across the desert, visited his grandfather, and his grandfather said, "Wow, you know, I don't have your answer. It's always been that way. Go talk to your great-great-grandfather." Threw his backpack on again, trekked to his great-great-grandfather's residence, sat down at the foot of his great-grandfather, told his story, asked the question again, "Why is it that when there's confrontation between man and lion, man always wins?" Great-great-grandfather looked at him and said, "Son, it's always going to be that way until the lion learns how to write." Who's telling our story? Who's writing it? Who's creating the reality? Okay? Who's creating it? And why? Yeah. How many people, I'm going to ask you another question. How many of you all have been in a situation, a circumstance, or saw something that touched you deeply, and you said, "Why? Why? Why is it that way? Why are we suffering? Why is there so much, poor example, but crime and criminality in our communities and in our state, because in our state?" Because actually, that's not the reality. Okay? But we say, why? That's a three-letter word. I have another three-letter word for you. How? Once we get done with the why, it's time to ask the how question. The how question means, how do we transform it? How do we rebuild it? How do we retool it? How do we hold those accountable who have a different reality than we do to understand our reality, to make it just, or to make it safe, or to at least make it viable so that human beings can be human beings? That's the how question, okay? And it takes many of us, you know, I dare to say it will take all of us to begin to explore the how, okay? Now, as a peer specialist at Just Dane, I'm never in the office. I'm in community, because Frank said he wanted to talk about community. Well, what is community? Anybody want to venture a guess? People. What else goes along with people to have community? Shared purpose. The human race. Okay, let's take all of those and put them into one category called connectedness. How do we connect? You know, we've all been used, we've all been misinformed in a whole lot of ways. Okay, for granted, let's take this for granted. We're all brought up in different families, am I right? Okay, the creator of the universe, both he and she decided that there would be some differences. Okay, we're gonna have fun. We don't want everybody walking around looking like, you know, little robots. Okay, so there's gonna be some differences. There's gonna be some differences in gender, the way that we speak, the colors of our skin, the textures of our hair, and the colors of our eyes. There's gonna be, you know, that beautiful rainbow that's called us. All right? But we were still all tricked and manipulated. This is the terminology I will use for what I will attempt to describe for you. Communities of confinement. I was brought up in a community of confinement where the messaging was, stay away from over there. You don't belong over there. You don't possess the talent or the language deserving of being over there. So the lines were drawn. And those were the messages that I received from here to here to here to here and everywhere around me in the community that I was raised in. But in and of itself, it wasn't a community because just like I was misinformed and misdirected, the generations of people before me were as well. Okay? So there was no need for me to blame them for what they didn't know. My job was to pay attention to it and to understand it so that I could do what? Began to go out in community and figure out how to connect. Okay? With my brothers and sisters of every gender, every economical background, every form of politics, okay? All of that. And what would motivate me to do that? Empathy. But wanting to also become a part of the human family. I wasn't deemed human. All right? Now, there's one significant thing that ties all of this together, and I know that none of us are foreign to this concept. And I share this with individuals in a lot of places that I occupy or visit. And it's simple. Sounds simple, but not so simple. Language. I often say that language is the currency of and to power. And ultimately, the power is wielded by those who possess this. Okay? Have you ever had a conversation with someone? And in that exchange, you hear, well, they. I heard it so much, I said, go get they and let me and they have a conversation. I want to see who they are. All right? So, you know, I mean, it was kind of like, okay, I'm on this journey to find out, you know, who is they? What does this person look like? Where does this person, you know, go for recreation? Are they like me? Do they enjoy fishing or the outdoors and gardening and all? I want to see. I want to see they because they, I am being told, make all the decisions. They set the foundation for my daily existence. Who is that? I found them. I found they at the state capitol one day. I went because some friends called upon me to go to the capitol because they were considering legislation that would require anybody in the criminal justice reform, you know, it has so many languages that it confuses us. We're sponsoring some legislation that said anyone convicted of a crime and sentenced more than 4 years would automatically lose their paternal rights. I said, wow. And I sat there and listened to they before that actual bill came up. I paid very close attention. And they said, well, we have this other piece of legislation, and we almost have a consensus, but we have one word in that whole piece of legislation that we need to change, and then we'll all be on board. And I said, wow, one word. But also listen to the other exchanges that went on throughout the day of other citizens coming to testify who were concerned and actually pushing this legislation because of unfortunate situations and circumstances that happened to them in their lives. And I understood the tragic nature of what had happened to them and what they had experienced, but I knew that this wasn't the answer, okay? But also understood in that moment that this one term was going to create the reality for anyone in those situations for generations to come. That language isn't something that stands alone. It has an impact and it has an action connected to it. All right. Prior to that, I sat down and thought about it in this way. I said, if someone comes and puts me on a plane and sends me to Germany, to China, to Amsterdam, and I don't speak the language, I'm lost. I'm without direction. I don't know where to go, what to do, who to talk to. Are we even going to understand one another? So the value and the importance of the language that we use matters, okay, in every space of our lives, whether it's Moses, whether it's here, you know, within the confines of this building, whether it's at our employment, in our schools, the language matters. Who controls the destiny of the language in our country, in our communities, in our society that makes a difference or will make a difference? I also like to say it's critical to understand what power is. I can ask every single person in this room for a definition of power and get a different answer from each of you. My adopted definition, because it's not original to me, says this: power is the ability to define reality and have other people respond to your definition as if it were their own. Should I repeat? Most people don't allow me to do this. Thank you. Power is the ability to define reality and have other people respond to your definition as if it were their own. Consider that. Who's creating our realities? Who has the power to create our realities? When I first saw that, it was contributed as an old Jamaican proverb. And I was, wow, is there any truth to this proverb or this statement? And again, I went back to my old standby, pay attention. So I started bringing that quote with me everywhere that I went. Here first, when I observe the conditions around the world, when I observe the conditions in the United States, okay, when I observe what was going on in the fields of war and famine and all those things that bring tragedy and consequence to us that we aren't the decision makers for, wow, that's the ultimate power. If you can create my reality for me to the degree that I believe or I feed into it to the degree that I believe it's mine when it isn't, wow. Let's step back for a minute, because that's where the space is created where we can begin to see, and I say we because without us it's impossible, where we can begin to create in our connectedness, a collective reality that honors each and every one of us. And this is just my belief. I believe that sets the foundation for community. for community. I'm not going to say how old I am. I'm going to say I'm a seasoned 64. Okay? So I remember with my grandparents and my great-grandparents being in community, being in neighborhood, where people talked to one another, where people shared with one another, where my great-grandmother could give me a little note and say, here, go up to the grocery store and get this to Mr. Jerry, and Mr. Jerry would fill up the grocery bag, and I didn't have to exchange currency for whatever that was because they had an agreement that this was about sustainable community. Okay? I grew up in a community because now it's very important, you know, that people recognize and respect people's pronouns. I grew up in a family where my Uncle Jesse and my Aunt Vicky were the same person. So I wasn't taught to discriminate, to belittle people because of their choices or their gender, and those are the types of things that the language that is being created today causes separation. Very well intentioned, I get it, but it also has posited a sense of separation. So my time's coming up? Okay. All right, see, I told you. But, you know, in any event, you know, my purpose, my reason, because I heard the term purpose. And I also talked to a person one day who was literally sitting on the ground. I was taking my normal walk around the Capitol, hungry, seeking some assistance, and looked at me and said, Mr. Morgan, I lost my purpose. That person didn't realize sitting there that although the rest of the world or the rest of the citizens who walked past her didn't see her, was invisible. I connected because I've been in that space of invisibility where I wasn't seen. But that was her purpose. Her purpose was to remind me that a reminder helps to remind. That irregardless of an individual situation in life, when we're not in tuned to what their backstory may or may not have been, that they still deserved human empathy, to be seen, and to be a part of community. So I think that's, and I'm very careful with the word calling. I've gone throughout the city and even in Moses and where I'm from, Michigan and Houston and other places. I have a son-in-law that's a minister. I have a brother that's a minister. And to a person, to a man, they tell me, I've been called. Brother, I was called. God called me to the work. And I say, okay. You were called. And here's my calling for each and every one of us. You may be called, and that may look different for each and every one of us. But at the end of the day, understand the mission. Because this is a mission. This is a carrying out of what defines human relationship, human dignity, empathy, being in sorrow with the other person, being in joy with the other person. And at the same time, because this is critical, being able to grant to yourself that same level of compassion and dignity that you give to others. So I'm going to end there. Now, what I said about most people don't allow me to do this, they don't allow me to go unscripted. But I believe that it's important to bring my genuine self to the spaces that I inhabit, the spaces that I come to share what have been, some truly wonderful experiences in my life, you know, the epiphanies that come and go, the people that I've learned to meet and connect with, you know, within this community, within Madison, Wisconsin, you know, across this city. And I never take it for granted. You know, I pay attention to the fact that given what was as opposed to what is, that I'm a very blessed man to even be standing here. I'm a blessed man for being able to wake up this morning and share with you the one thing that we cannot escape in our connectedness. Y'all pay close attention to me now, because if you don't see it, you'll miss it. Did you catch it? I'm going to do it again. I see a couple of looks that say, what? Keep breathing. Thank you. If most of us, not all, there's some exceptions, on a daily basis live our lives on the what ifs. What if? Okay, I'm glad you shared what you just shared. Because if you want to know what Moses is sitting in this room. There's no Moses without you. As was stated, I was there from the very beginning of this organization. Okay, where we met in the basement of First Congregational over on University. It was like six or seven of us. And then the original president, Carol Rubin, met the director of Wisdom. And we went on the path to becoming an organization. Six of us. We eat stale donuts, drink cold coffee. All right. We really didn't have a sense of direction of what Moses would look like. All right. And then we had a meeting out in Sun Prairie with a bunch of other congregations, and we had come up with this idea about this concept, or this idea about decreasing the prison population in the state of Wisconsin in half by 2015, so it became the 11 by 15 campaign. Okay. And so people were saying, oh, that's a lofty goal. You'll never do it. Okay. It won't be successful. All right. And did we? You know, we didn't achieve that particular goal. But look where we are today. So it was successful. One of the things that Moses, you know, one of the primary accomplishments concerning Moses, because there are many, and you know, you are Moses. This is just one. If you want some other yearbooks or have me and Frank come back or others come and speak to you more about the organization, we'd be more than happy to do that. But one of the challenges for people coming home from incarceration, this is just one example, was finding employment. Couldn't find a job anywhere. All right. And I was one of those individuals. I applied for 500 jobs in this city and didn't get a single call back. And a lot of people did. Oh, no, that's impossible. That's not a reality. It couldn't have happened. Okay, but I was at one of the halfway houses, and every day I left there, I left with a sheet of paper, and I had to put in 5 job applications every single day. So when they said no, I said yes. Here, see it for yourself. So then someone said, would you mind going to the Capitol and talking to the legislators about that? I said, sure, let's go. They won't know who I am. They probably won't care, but that's okay. It's a reality, all right? So then the Moses president and others work with some of the other political individuals in the city, and they've got a bill passed to say that contracts, city contracts, they could no longer consider an individual's criminal background unless it was directly related to the job that they were applying for. That was huge. That was critical for a lot of people who were struggling just to find employment. All right. So it's a participatory organization. There's action. We've got, maybe I should mention this quickly, April 17th, 27th. Okay, 27th, there's Madison Action Day. And so that's not just Moses, that's Wisdom affiliates from all around the state will be gathering here at the Capitol in Madison to talk to our legislators about the criminal justice system reform initiatives that are under the umbrella of Wisdom and Moses and so many other of the affiliates throughout the state. I'm hoping maybe Frank or someone will get that information to you all. We'd like to see you all there in support, you know, of what it is we are wanting to accomplish on behalf of our other citizens, you know, who are at a disadvantage. And not just those who are incarcerated. We're talking about people who suffer from mental health issues, lack of housing issues, all of those things. You know, you can find a place for your presence in Moses. And we would love to have you there. So, okay.
Thank you so much, James.